Blog Talk Radio.
At 12 o'clock in Stalking Sports with Mike T. I'm your host, Mike Tramatozzi, here with you for the next half hour. Lots to talk about today. Obviously, the NFL playoffs are one round and done, and we head to the divisional rounds next week. Very weird weekend of games, because if you think about it, when you get to the playoffs, a lot of these notions that you have about the NFL playoffs got turned upside down over the weekend. Three of the four teams lost the turnover battle, but won. Three of the four teams went on the road and won. The Packers lost another game in the cold at Lambeau Field. Teams were kicking field goals in the red zone and winning. I mean, it was just things that normally lead to losing. These teams were winning. Teams blew leads. You know, just insane problems that transpired in these playoff games. If you have any thoughts on it, hit me up. 760-283-0846 is the number. Let's start with Kansas City, because having gone through the Trey Junkin game in 02 with the 49ers and Giants, if you don't remember, that was the game the Giants blew that huge lead in the fourth quarter, and the 49ers came back and won the game, only to have to take the lead, only to have the Giants come back, get in field goal range, and blow the field goal. So we've seen this before. Obviously, if you go back in time to the Frank Reich comeback for the Bills against the Oilers in 93, there's that, which was an even bigger comeback. But when you look at this game, the Chiefs, I think, were partially done in by, A, so many guys going down. I mean, they lost three Pro Bowlers throughout that game. Charles, Flowers, and Justin Houston all got hurt in that game and never returned. Throw in Donnie Avery, and, you know, you're missing huge components to your team. Now, that's still no excuse to blow a 38-10 lead. However, you go back, the Chiefs had a chance to put their foot on that game, on the throw to the Colts at 7-7. They had a first and goal at the 1, three tries, couldn't get in. Now, I'm of the mind that when you're at the 1-yard line, you go for it, because especially with Kansas City's defense, I would hope that Andy Reid has enough of trust in that defense after the year it gave him to think that they're not going to get 99 yards on them. However, Andy didn't. Andy kicked a 20-yard field goal and only put himself up 10-7. Now, to be fair, they did score 28 straight points after that and got to 38-10. Now, there's no excuse to lose a playoff game when you put up 44 points. That's not on Alex Smith. That's totally on the defense. But you could tell that once these guys started going down, once Flowers went down, the whole back defensive backfield opened up for T.Y. Hilton to do whatever he wants. Fleener got open over Berry, which is surprising, because Berry's, if you look at the numbers, a very good coverage safety. Yet, the Donald Brown fumble at the goal line that just happened to bounce off three Colts and bounce right into Andrew Luck's hands, and he ran it in for the touchdown. You talk about the intentional grounding on Alex Smith at the end of the game that basically not only took them out of field goal range, ended the game. They had the chance. They actually got a play they wanted, and they got both single covered up the sideline. But Toler did a very good job of angling him towards the sideline and not giving him a lot of ground to get inbounds. And he came about a half a foot from getting inbounds. So a good job by the Colts to not give up. They got some breaks as the game went along, but I don't know if the Colts can win next week in Denver, committing four turnovers and spotting Denver 44 points. I don't think it's going to work that way. Now, Denver doesn't do a great job of forcing turnovers. They're not going to have Von Miller. Maybe Denver's defense is less likely to force those turnovers, and you know, who knows about Indy's defense. But if Vontae Davis is not 100% and Dwayne Bowe ate him to shreds in that game, then I don't see how Indy stops the Broncos anyway. Let alone if these guys are, you know, 70%, 75%. They will be getting Welker back, which just adds to the fact of how dominant they can be offensively. If I had to make a guess, I think Denver is more likely to put up close to 40 for this game in the cold than Indy is. Now, last year we all thought Baltimore had no shot of going into Denver. One Hail Mary later, Baltimore was on their way to the AFC title game. In the other game, you've got San Diego, who completely took the fight to Cincinnati yesterday in a game that the Bengals, you get to the playoffs 3 years in a row, and that's an accomplishment, and they took that next step this year by winning the division, getting a home playoff game. I mean, you're 8-0 at home during the regular season. You put up over 30 points per game at home on the season, and you muster 10. Bernard fumbled inside the 10-yard line, which was probably going to be a touchdown, but they did get three out of that sequence because San Diego went three and out, and then Cincinnati got back in and kicked a field goal right before the half ended. But that was another sequence of a team looking to take control of a game and instead having to settle for a field goal. Now, they didn't settle for a 20-yard field goal. They did kick a 45-yarder, but it's the point of a touchdown is demoralizing. A field goal kind of goes, okay, we didn't give up a touchdown. You know, we're still in this. And they didn't even come close in the second half. Some bad plays by Dalton. San Diego controlled the ball. You really saw Cincinnati miss Geno Atkins, Leon Hall. These were guys they really needed in this game, guys that they haven't had for months. Let's be fair, they didn't have them for months. Geno Smith's been out. Geno Atkins has been out since Halloween. So it's not like they can't find somebody. They've been without Geno Atkins for a while. Same with Leon Hall. Two borderline Pro Bowlers that, again, you don't have. Michael Johnson got hurt. He did come back, but he got hurt. Perfect got nicked up, but he continued to play. I don't know where the Bengals go from here. I don't know where they go from here, because you have to wonder, when is Andy Dalton going to stop making these really boneheaded throws? And he made a couple in the third quarter there that really changed the momentum of the game. He had the fumble. It's three turnovers. He has six turnovers in his three playoff games, six interceptions in his three playoff losses, only one touchdown, and that was to Jermaine Gresham yesterday in the second quarter. So he's been largely ineffective. A.J. Green had a really non-existent game. He did have that one bomb down the sideline in the third quarter that he dropped. The defender did get his hand in there, but it definitely looked like it was a catch that Green should make. Now you wonder, what do the Bengals do? Do they bring in a vet to kind of push Dalton? Do they just continue to rely on Dalton and maybe get some more help, whether it's on the offensive line or on the defense? I don't know if they're that far from being a really good team, but it was said, I mean, the Chargers are 9-7. They barely got into the playoffs. You're at home. Like I said, you're 8-0 at home, and you go and you lay a total egg at home. I mean, that's brutal even by Marvin Lewis standards, and he's now 0-5 in the playoffs as coach of the Bengals. So, 5 playoff trips in 11 years is very good, considering what the Bengals were before he got there. But at some point, you're going to need to win one of these games and at least get yourself to the second round, or at least take the belief that you're a contending team and actually show it. It's one thing to get to the playoffs, but this team has gotten to the playoffs enough that now they need to take that next step. So San Diego continues to win. They've now haven't lost since the last game that they played the Bengals, which was on December 1st. That dropped them to 5-7. They've now won 5 in a row. They go to New England to face a Patriot team that I don't know what to expect out of them. They've moved Ridley back into the lineup. They have gotten a lot of production out of LeGarrette Blount. They obviously have Vereen, Amendola, and Julian Edelman. So there are offensive weapons, but it's not the dynamic Gronkowski, Hernandez, Wes Welker offense that we've been used to for the last couple of years. This is a much different offense. It'll be interesting to see how San Diego plays that. It'll be interesting to see how New England's defense plays San Diego. Can they run the ball? They gave up a lot of rushing yards to Buffalo in Week 17. Obviously, the Dolphins had a good running game against them in Week 15. You'd never want to bet against Tom Brady at home, especially in a divisional round. They haven't lost, I think the last time they haven't lost in the AFC Championship game or Super Bowl was that game to Baltimore in 09, where Baltimore came in and just steamrolled them in the first half. So I think that game is going to come down to how does San Diego play New England's offense and what kind of wrinkles has New England put in with a week off to prepare for this game. I don't think the home teams – this is the week where I think you're going to see the home teams win. The only game that could be tricky is San Francisco and Carolina, a rematch of a game the Panthers won in San Francisco. So you would think that Carolina – has a ton of confidence. Obviously, they should have a ton of confidence. As we move to the NFC, the 49ers, as I mentioned, will move to Carolina to face the second-seeded Panthers on Sunday as they survive the cold in Green Bay. It didn't get as cold as everybody thought, but I don't care what you say. 3 degrees with the wind chill around negative 15, that's cold. So the 49ers in a back-and-forth game that saw them kick a ton of field goals early and not quite take advantage of the fact that they were dominating the game. And then in the second half, the Packers got going, actually took the lead a couple times. 17-13 was the lead after Rodgers had an improbable escape on 4th-and-2 and hit Randall Cobb down to the goal line, or down into the inside the 10, and then John Kuhn ran it in. But give the 49ers credit, they came right back. They came right back and got a 20-yard touchdown to Vernon Davis. And then they gave up a field goal where, well, the Packers again got it inside the 10-yard line, or inside the red zone, had to settle for a field goal. And that right inability to score a touchdown right there allowed the 49ers to go right down the field. They dropped an interception. They dropped an interception. So the Packers almost got a huge turnover. It was a really bad throw by Kaepernick. But they dropped it. He then gets a big run. They get a huge completion to Crabtree. And away they go. They end up kicking a 35-yarder that somehow went right through the hands of the guy coming off the edge, right through his arms, and wasn't blocked. So they came that close to blocking that kick and forcing overtime. Instead, the 49ers will move on and face Carolina, who, like I said, beat them. And the 49ers were already making declarations how they owe them for that game. So it'll be interesting to see if Carolina can kind of show them that one game in San Francisco was not a fluke. And when you have a defense like that, it tends to not be a fluke. But they did not have Crabtree in that game. And they really bothered Kaepernick all game. So if you're Carolina, you want to do more of the same, maybe get a little more offensive production. If you're the 49ers, you have to find a way to get Crabtree the ball and get Kaepernick protected, because if you're not going to protect Kaepernick against that defensive line, then you're not going to win. So that'll be a very interesting game on Sunday. Saturday, the night game will be Seattle and New Orleans. New Orleans going on the road in the cold, not, you know, freezing cold, you know, low 20s is still cold, but went on the road to Philadelphia and orchestrated a drive down 24-23 to set up the game-winning field goal and win it 26-24. Bunch of field goals for Shane Graham in that game. I believe he kicked four. And the Saints finally get a road playoff win, something they had never done in their history as a franchise. Remember, in 2000, they beat the Rams at home and then lost to the Vikings in the second round. In their Super Bowl year, they had home field throughout in 09. And in 2006, when they got to the NFC title game, they had that bye. They beat the Eagles in the second round, but then lost to the Bears in the NFC title game. So the first win for the Saints, road-wise, potentially tougher. They went into New Orleans, into Seattle on a Monday night with home field and the number one seed on the line and got bombed. Run off the field bomb. Now, they've had to play. The Seahawks get a week off. There's rumors that Harvin may play. He practiced this week, so you wonder if Percy Harvin's going to be eligible to play. Really hasn't made much of an impact on this team, but Percy Harvin is just another dimension to this offense that he can, that Carroll and Bevel can unleash on the Saints. And you have to wonder how the Saints are going to combat this Seahawk defense that and do something different that they couldn't do a couple weeks ago. I don't like the matchup for the Saints. I think it's a bad matchup for the Saints. I think they would have much rather have seen anybody else but Seattle. Now, as the sixth seed, they couldn't have gone anywhere else because no matter what, a win by them would make them the lowest remaining seed. But those are the way it lies, and I think you know the Saints are just happy to be going to the second round, and they'll worry about the Seahawks on Saturday night. But if you thought that stadium was loud during the regular season, just imagine what it's going to be in the playoffs. The only game they lost was a tough game to Arizona, but I think as we all have seen, Arizona's a better team than we all thought. Now, they've struggled a bit. You look at the Tampa Bay game, obviously the loss to Arizona, but the Seahawks are still the best team in the NFC. And the fact that someone has to go in there to beat them with that defense, I don't see it. I've said it for weeks. I don't think anybody can go into Seattle and get within two scores. I just think that crowd is absolutely ridiculous, and the defense feeds off it. And when you've got three Pro Bowlers in your defensive backfield, Thomas, Chancellor, and Sherman, you then get Thurman in there as the corner opposite Sherman. Obviously, Browner will not be activated. It's not a game that matches up well for the Saints. It's outside. I can almost guarantee you the weather is going to be a lot worse in terms of Chris Collinsworth brought a good point up on Saturday. It was cold, but the wind wasn't a problem. There wasn't any precipitation. There was no wind. And outside of it being cold, it really didn't seem like it could affect New England too much. Now, if you go and you look at the weather's temperature for Seattle, and you look forward to Saturday, you're talking about rain all day. Right now it's saying that the temperature at night is going to be about 39 degrees and rainy and 11-mile-an-hour wind, so we'll see how that goes, but it seems like, obviously, in Seattle it rains a lot, and there seems to be rain all week in Seattle. But the temperatures don't seem to be terrible. But again, this game will be played at night. So you're talking low 40s, high 30s, which is a little bit warmer than it was in Seattle. But the rain and the wind is definitely could cause a problem for the Saints. I like Seattle. I like Seattle to advance. I've said it for weeks. I think Seattle's the best team in the NFC. I haven't seen anything to change my mind. And I just don't know if the Saints can do it twice, especially going to a spot that is a disaster to play in. You know, you lose one game over the last 3 years at home, and that's solid. And I don't know if there's a team in the NFC that can beat them. Neutral field on the road, different. You have a chance. I don't know if you have a chance at home. When they're at home, I don't think you have a chance. I just don't see it. Then again, I went 0-4 this weekend, so maybe I'm totally wrong. In the other NFC matchup, boy, that's a toss-up. Two really good defenses, two offenses that don't do much but do enough. I think the 49ers have a little bit more big play capabilities in their offense than the Panthers want to do. But, boy, you could also see this being like one of those games that's a Cam Newton coming out party. Usually you're supposed to go with the home team in a toss-up, but as you saw this weekend, three of the four road teams won, and the fourth, Kansas City, had a 28-point lead in the third quarter. Well, you ran the risk of all four road teams winning their game. Does that mean San Francisco and New Orleans are locks? No, because like I said, I think Seattle is going to win, and that game on Monday night only reaffirmed my belief that the Saints can't survive in New Orleans. It can't survive going to Seattle, especially if it's windy and rainy. Those are just conditions that they won't play well in. That's enough of a disruption to their offense than it is just the cold. I think you're looking at a very strong possibility of San Francisco having to go to Seattle for the NFC Championship game, but I would not be surprised if Carolina won. I think Carolina's on a roll. They're feeling their oats a bit. San Francisco obviously has earned the right to be respected and be picked to win the game, but I don't know if they can. Carolina played them very well in San Francisco. The only difference is Crabtree's back. So it'll be interesting. I think San Francisco will win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Carolina continued to play as well as they've played. In the AFC, I really like Denver and New England to win. So you're setting up, you have the potential to set up an amazing championship Sunday in 2 weeks. If you're looking at San Francisco, Seattle, and Denver, New England, those are titanic matchups. Absolutely huge matchups for the NFL. I think there's a strong possibility you're going to see it. And the Seattle part is almost a lock, I think. You know, New England or New Orleans already went up there, but they didn't play well. Now, does that mean that they're now used to the noise and everything? But if it's raining and there's 15-mile-an-hour winds, yeah, then you know what? Now you're running into problems because that affects your offense more than the just being cold. And you saw it. The Saints were still able to move the ball on Saturday in the cold. There was no wind, and there was no precipitation. But if it's raining in Seattle, which is almost like saying if it's sunny in San Diego, if it's raining in San Diego, like they're Seattle, like they're predicting, and it's cold, and it's windy, I think that's a recipe for disaster if you're the Saints. So, unfortunately, we are out of time. I'd like to thank everybody who took the time to listen. I hope everybody enjoys their week. Catch us on Wednesday, Real Sports Talk. Me and Randy Zelia will go through everything and get you ready for the divisional playoff round. I hope everybody enjoys their week, and we'll see everybody back here next time. So everybody take care.